Returning with me right now is Michael Smith of Mike's Rant on Nolan's Pop Culture Review, the Leavenworth Times, and an esteemed member of the Kansas City Film Critics Circle. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Happy to be here.
I dare say it was quite an upset and a lot of surprises on Oscar night. They're calling it the Brokeback upset. What do you feel about that? According to your predictions, you thought that Munich should win, but Brokeback Mountain would win, and you certainly weren't alone. most critics thought that Brokeback would win, and when Jack Nicholson announced it was Crash, that was the movie of the year, the best picture of the year, there were audible gasps in the audience, and a lot of people scratching their heads wondering what happened. What's your take on that?
Well, I also noted that Crash could be a dark horse. Nicholson, I thought he was going to fall over. I haven't seen a announcer or a presenter that shocked since Harrison Ford, who only shows up to give Oscars to Steven Spielberg, had to read Shakespeare in Love instead of Saving Private Ryan. Crash is an actor's picture. You know, as John Stewart noted, you should raise your hand if you weren't in the film. And actors make up probably 70% of the voting body of the Academy. So, you know, they all liked it. It was an actor's film. Taking nothing away from it. I thought it was an excellent film. I'm not upset that it won. This is one of the few years where any five of those would have won, and I would have said, okay, good choice. So, you know, I know that the popular vote and the word of mouth was that it was going to be Brokeback, but once again, a little upset, which always keeps them interesting.
Yeah, I also want to point out something we brought up last week very, very briefly, and then fellow PCR writer Brandon Jones and I have corresponded with over the, you know, over the message board, is that all five top movies were not particularly big money makers. Not that that's a requirement to win an Oscar or anything. It has been in years past, is known that it's far from it, that the monetary success of a film predicts its Oscar liability. But this year particularly so, that all five films barely made what Narnia made all by itself.
Right.
Narnia wasn't snubbed or anything. I mean, it got a couple of awards, but still, I mean, it's like they turned their nose down at it almost to go with the films that typically they feel the best about but aren't particularly successful.
Well, I think you'd have to almost go back to 97 in Titanic, where a film that was just so immensely huge at the box office had taken Best Picture. All the critics, I think, I want to say almost every critics group that year gave their Best Picture vote to L.A. Confidential. In previous years, you know, Star Wars nominated for Best Picture didn't win. Jaws nominated for Best Picture didn't win.
I'm also thinking, I think, of the most pivotal year to me that I first noticed that a big moneymaker picture was totally snubbed by the Academy, or almost totally snubbed by the Academy, was the year that Gandhi won Best Picture, the year that E.T. Broke all worldwide records at the box office.
Right, and I mean, go back and correct myself there, because Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, did win Best Picture. But I think Hollywood is kind of taking a turn both for the good and the bad, and we'll get to the best song category, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, recognizing, I mean, this year they actually recognized films that were great films that had a message. And I think that originally was, that is the, to me, films should entertain, but you should also be able to walk away and say, you know, and think about what you saw.
And Crash is, how would you describe Crash if somebody hasn't seen it? I haven't seen it, but I remember it was about race relations.
Crash is very similar to the Lawrence Kasdan film Grand Canyon, in that it has many interlinking stories. A lot of it in Crash, though, is kind of racial overtones. It starts off You got two black guys walking through, I want to say the Brentwood district of LA, and everybody's giving them looks, and the one guy says, look at how they're looking at us, because there's two black guys walking through Brentwood. You know, they must think we're this, they must think we're that. And then they pull out a gun and they carjack somebody. So it's just, you know, it plays on the racial stereotypes, but it makes you think, because Matt Dillon, you know, he's a racist cop, and you think, God, this guy just hates black people. And then what does he do? He risks his life to save a black woman, the same black woman that he supposedly harassed the night before from a burning car.
Sure.
So that's
a great story, and it makes him a hero, and it's very exciting, but it hardly created a buzz for Oscar. You know, it was a good movie, like the others are a good movie, but the buzz that was just skyrocketing was over Brokeback Mountain. How does that jive?
Well, to me, Brokeback Mountain, while a great film, was basically a love story. It was Romeo and Juliet. It was West Side Story. It was, you know, it could have been anything. It could have been, you know, 40 years ago. It could have been, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but a little more intense.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, to me, it's just a love story, which basically, you know, showing that, you know, love lasts, and here's the effect it has on people.
Definitely. And the, much of the buzz had to do with the gay theme about the gay cowboys and all that. But one of the comments I've heard and have rejected is that the buzz peaked too early. I can't believe that, because there was no buzz for Crash, so that really doesn't hold up. But I have heard that this was possibly a political move, that with Philip Seymour Hoffman winning for Best Actor, and we'll get to that in a minute, if he had won and then Brokeback Mountain had won, it would just be too much gay too soon at the Academy. Do you think there's any weight to that?
Well, I think, you know, we had discussed this a couple of years ago when the year Denzel Washington and Halle Berry won, and the same year they gave Sidney Poitier an honorary Oscar, that, you know, maybe it was their year to recognize black actors, not taking away from their performances, because I actually voted for Halle Berry to win. And maybe they're not, you know, maybe they're seeing, maybe there is a backlash. Maybe there is more of a backlash, of honoring or recognizing, or for want of a better term, accepting gay films in the mainstream.
Oh, there is a movement to accept them more, but what I was saying is that it the last minute snub for Brokeback Mountain suggests that maybe the Academy felt that was too much too soon to give it Best Picture.
I agree with that, and you know, like I said, maybe it's, you know, well, let's not validate it too quickly. Let's see what else, you know, see what comes of it. That was lightning. Nobody shot me. Sorry.
Is lightning where you are?
Yes, pretty good rainstorm.
Best director, though, did go to Ang Lee, Brokeback Mountain, which you had predicted. It's funny thing how, in fact, Terrence and I were talking the other day. In fact, you and I may have brought it up last week, how the best director and the best picture should really go hand in hand, and how many other angles or how many other facets of a picture determines that a director of another movie gets the best director but not his best picture. But certainly that would speak very strongly of Brokeback Mountain. And for all of us comic to movie fans, we forgive him for The Incredible Hulk.
Well, I also think that sometimes the director has done the best work, but they really don't want the Academy, whoever it may be, doesn't want to validate the picture.
For whatever reason.
Right. Like when Driving Miss Daisy won, Oliver Stone won for Born on the 4th of July for director. Shakespeare in Love won. Spielberg won for Saving Private Ryan. You know, Chicago won.
With some irony, I would like to say about our comparison before about movies that win Oscars versus the in the same year movies that make a lot of money. Spielberg won for Saving Private Ryan, and he was put up against his own picture Jurassic Park, which was a huge, huge moneymaker.
Right. And, you know, same with when he had Schindler's List. He had,
That was the year Schindler's List, wasn't it?
Right.
Saving Private Ryan, forgive me. Yeah, Schindler's List won the Oscar the same year that Jurassic Park came out, right?
Right. I want to say maybe Lost World was the same year of Private Ryan. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I think, you know, in the Academy, like I said, you know, Ang Lee, excellent director. He was wrong choice for the Hulk. I was very honored in a way that when he filmed Ride with the Devil here, the very first footage he shot, he wanted to see what it was like on the big screen. And I screened it for him here in Kansas City. And just watching silent footage with anything, just the way he set up the camera and everything else, you know, the man is a brilliant director. So, and I think he should have won for Crouching Tiger. So in a way, you know, I had no, like I said, I was happy he won.
So am I. Now we move to Best Actor, Philip Seymour Hoffman. He was a runaway odds favorite. I think the young Joaquin Phoenix for Walk the Line were kind of neck and neck until the end of the year, where I think Capote started to inch forward, and so that was very satisfying. That was a very remarkable portrayal.
Yeah, and then understanding that he was kind of like Daniel Day-Lewis, and that he insisted on remaining in character throughout the shoot. You know, even when he and just really grew into the character.
Certainly did inhabit it.
Yeah, it was just another thing. You know, he's a big stocky guy, and you know, Truman Capote was just a little guy, and to carry, you know, to pull that off, and like we had talked last week, these modern culture icons like Johnny Cash, Ed Murrow, and Truman Capote, they're so ingrained in a lot of people's memories that it's like, you know, when you believe you're actually watching them, when you're not saying, well, that guy's doing a good job, and you're thinking, well, that's Capote, that's when you know they pulled it off.
Speaking of Good Night and Good Luck, it didn't get anything, did it?
No, it was kind of
That came out about the same time as Capote last year, and everybody was railing and raving about the performances, and deservedly so. I'm a little surprised.
Well, I think once again you had more word of mouth, more as far as more people seeing it, more screeners going out. Capote was a small film that started out, didn't really have George Clooney's name attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it had a little harder way to go to get recognized. And I think once word of mouth starts on a great performance, it's pretty hard to beat it.
Best Actress, Reese Witherspoon. That was another one everyone saw coming a mile away for Walk the Line as June Carter. And she's another one talked about inhabiting the role, but Joaquin Phoenix seemed to be overshadowed, looks like in retrospect, maybe a little bit, by her and by Hoffman and Capote, although it was a magnificent performance. Still, Reese Witherspoon was also an odds-on favorite. So no big surprises there, except Best Picture. Isn't that something?
Reese Witherspoon, out of all the candidates, gave the best performance. I thought that the other four nominees were good performances, but they weren't as strong, whereas, you know, the Best Actor competition was just, you know, and there's people I'm sure that were left out, that, you know, Russell Crowe and Cinderella Man. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is the movie that got, you know, I'm sure finished sixth every category it was eligible for.
Mm-hmm.
But Joan Allen, who I thought was excellent in Upside and Anger, I thought she should have been nominated.
Mm-hmm.
Over, you know, Judi Dench or any, you know, not taking away from their performances. but there were a lot more stronger performances in the men's side this year than there were in the women's.
Speaking of which, best supporting actor, George Clooney for Syriana. And speaking of forgiving for past misdeeds, he often spoken of as having buried the Batman franchise and having franchise and having turned him gay, has come on strong with Syriana. And as I didn't see the award show, but I understand he gave the among the most moving speeches.
He gave a great speech, and I don't blame George Clooney. I blame Joel Schumacher for...
Joel Schumacher was the other word I was looking for. Yeah,
yeah.
Schumacher.
Yeah.
But in a recent interview with Barbara Walters, Clooney actually seemed to deliberately take at least partial credit for the rubber nipples on Batman and all of that. And I was a little surprised because I figured he'd try to distance himself from him, but he said he turned him gay. So maybe he's trying to help Schumacher out of that corner. But his work in Syriana was exemplary and has, I guess, like Ang Lee and Brokeback Mountain, they've moved past that.
Yeah.
And were able to come back.
His acceptance speech was brilliant. I actually posted on another movie site, on the British Academy Awards, David Putnam received an honorary, award, and he gave what I called then the best acceptance speech I've ever heard. As far as remembering.
Clooney's, really?
Clooney's is the best at the Oscars. David Putnam's is still up there. But Clooney talked about how people, you know, think, you know, the films he does, he's out of touch. And, you know, he says, but Hollywood, you know, we recognized AIDS when it was just being whispered about. Civil rights, he says, you know, he says it's ironic that this Academy gave Hattie McDaniel an Oscar in 1939 when black people had to sit in the back of the theater.
True.
And he ended with, he says, you know, I'm proud of this. He goes, and I'm proud that I'm out of touch. This is a guy that went from Return of the Tack to the Killer Tomatoes to recognizing his power and I guess you could say doing good with it. I mean, he could do a million Ocean's 11. I know he's doing Ocean's 13. So, but he's kind of evolved into a, almost like a Clint Eastwood, in that Eastwood knew his power, and Eastwood could say, okay, I'll make a Dirty Harry film for you, but then I'm going to make Bird. I'll make another film where I'm a cop, and then I'm going to do Unforgiven.
Right.
So George Clooney's learned that trade-off. Yeah, sure, I'll do Ocean's 13, but then I want to do Syriana. And, you know, so, you know, God bless him for using, you know, using his talents, you know, the way he's using them.
Best supporting actress, Rachel Weisz for The Constant Gardener. I didn't see The Constant Gardener. I really don't have any opinion one way or the other, except I congratulate her, of course. You have any comment on that?
No, she was great.
I see you liked Michelle Williams from Brokeback Mountain. You thought she should win.
Well, I just thought Michelle Williams had so many emotions she had to play off in that film. And it's really, you know, it's, what would you do if your husband came home and you found out he was in love with someone else, but it was another man, you know, but you've got kids and you're going, what's going on? Why is this? And she had so many different emotions she had to show, and she showed this so brilliantly. I would have voted for her. Rachel Weisz did an excellent job. I thought, you know, and she's done great work in the past. So, you know, it's nice that, you know, that finally she got, you know, a nomination, that she was rewarded for her work.
Absolutely. Now, in this week's Pop Culture Review, we'll be summarizing all of this and comparing what you predicted versus who won. And you did very well, as you have in years past. But for the first time in 6 years, we're not... going to have anyone to compare it to. Matt Drenenberg did not send in a list, and I did not compose a list, and nobody else sent in a list. A lot of the movies I hadn't even seen. I had a good run there in the middle of the summer, and we'll talk about some of those things in a second, but the late part of the year I had some recurring health problems, and I couldn't get out to the movies, and those are the ones that created all the chaos down at Oscar Central. I haven't heard from Matt, so I don't know how many of these he had predicted or not. So it's pretty much your show this year.
I guess I will remain the champion. I know Matt's doing a lot of stuff out of town. I know he was just in Vegas for a week and a half, and I'm sure he's not seeing as many films in the theater that he'd like, so I'll be his excuse boy this year, but next year we need you guys to come back and you know, make me work harder at this. Like I said, Crash is on DVD. I recommend it. A lot of the other ones are coming out on DVD soon. Concert Gardener's already on DVD. You know, this, like I said, this is the first year where I was like, good movie, good movie, good movie, good movie, good movie. So, I would recommend them all. If we had a DVD section, I would say, rent them all.
Going on to the rest of the categories, I just noticed I have the wrong list up here, but I think I have enough to go on. Best Animated Feature was pretty much a slam dunk for Wallace and Gromit. Best Art Direction, Memoirs of a Geisha. This is that, and you had predicted that, these are ones that you had predicted and then had won an Oscar. Best Cinematography, you had predicted Brokeback Mountain, and that turned out to be Memoirs of a Geisha. That came out with quite a few more than predicted. Best Costume Design, Memoirs of a Geisha. About this point, Brandon and I were talking about, I'll just skip ahead and say Best Visual Effects was King Kong, and that's certainly understandable, but and Best Makeup, Chronicles of Narnia, and that's really understandable, but we're kind of wondering where Batman and Star Wars and Sin City wound up. You don't seem to have any recognition for the effects there or the makeup there. Is it just they don't go for the fantasy of the films, or?
I think you and I talked about this a couple years ago when Rick Baker was snubbed for Apes. I think, and I'm happy to say that I know Greg Nicotero and his company, KNB, won the Oscar for Narnia. Greg didn't work on Narnia. He did Sin City. And when the nominations came out, we were all, you know, wow, what happened here? What happened there? I think sometimes the work is so good, and I think Corey mentioned this, that people just take for granted that Rick Baker's going to do great work. You know, now with the Robert Rodriguez films and the George Romero stuff and the other stuff he's done, I think a lot of people just take for granted now that Greg is going to do good work. You know, unfortunately, you know, I mean, Star Wars, I think that was one of the, maybe the only one or one of maybe two nominations that he got was for makeup.
I think Christian Haydenson got a raspberry or something.
Well deserved.
Okay, best film editing was Crash, and that's Cinderella Man. Best documentary short subject, or best documentary feature, rather. Let me go to that. March of the Penguins. That was a big favorite. That played here at the Tampa Theater and was very popular for a documentary. That was pretty amazing. Best documentary short subject, you had predicted God Sleeps in Rwanda, and it was the Golden Age. Let me scroll over here. Golden Age of Norman Corwin, whatever that is. I'm afraid I've never even heard of that. Best foreign language film. I think I had a note somewhere that you had said Paradise Now, but it was actually something else.
Yeah, it was
how do you pronounce that?
Saatchi. Which actually just opened this week in Kansas City, so I hadn't seen it. I mean, I'm not saying, oh, I would have voted for it. I haven't seen it. I hope that I'll get out and see it.
Best
director.
I
thought the director, his speech was very moving too. The director of that film.
Best original score, you have Memoirs of a Geisha. I don't have my other list. Was that the actual winner?
No, once again, John Williams, and there's like two of his best scores ever. I think, once again, they take John Williams for granted. It was the score from Brokeback Mountain, which was good. Just a lot of, you know, twangy guitars and that kind of stuff.
Now, but, remember this, the best original song, you predicted Traveling Through Transamerica, but I remember it was that one by the rap group.
Hey, it's tough and, out here to be a pimp.
Yeah, that's where Jon Stewart said, in case anyone's keeping count, Martin Scorsese, zero Oscars, and what's the rap group?
Oh, three six Mafia.
3 6 Mafia, one.
Yeah.
What the heck?
You know, and that's where I think, we talked about earlier, the Academy going the other way. Eminem won a couple years ago. Lose Yourself was a good song. But it's like, you know, this is a music branch that over the years, failed to recognize the Beatles, failed to recognize the Bee Gees, failed to recognize Neil Diamond, you know, Bob Dylan, Knocking on Heaven's Door wasn't even nominated. You know, it's like, you know, now they're going, oh, we got a rap song. You know, and there was a great song, and I can't think of the title now, there was a great original song in Brokeback Mountain, which was actually won the Golden Globe, that wasn't even nominated. This is the first time since 1980, there were only 3 songs nominated. There weren't 5.
Mm.
So, you know, I also found surprise.
Best original screenplay, you had predicted Crash, and who was it?
Crash.
It was Crash. And best adapted. And best adapted screenplay, you had predicted Brokeback Mountain, and I believe that was.
It was indeed, yes.
Brokeback Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And best visual effects, King Kong. What did you think of Jon Stewart as a host?
I thought he did an excellent job. I thought the opening bit, which I hope you get a chance to see with all the past hosts, begging off reason, that they couldn't host. I thought it was, well done. I thought Halle Berry and George Clooney, great sense of humor because they participated in it. I thought, you know, cause people, you know, I appreciate Jon Stewart's humor, and I thought that he was very, you know, he wasn't political. He was very bipartisan. He had a, you know, Cheney comment. He had a Democrat comment. Basically, the host of the show's job is to keep the show running, running smoothly, comment on it when you can. He's not Billy Crystal. His humor is 180 degrees from Billy Crystal. And, you know, that's what I think. Same with David Letterman. You know, David Letterman, oh, he was terrible. David Letterman did a great job.
Do you think it was almost too tame? I didn't see it, but I've read some commentary that maybe it was a little too under control with the network so afraid of another Janet Jackson thing or something.
Well, it might have been. I know 3 6 Mafia got bleeped a couple times in their acceptance speech.
I also heard they stole the show with their acceptance speech.
You got 4 guys in jerseys and jeans and their hats backward and then, you know, full grill on the front, thanking, you know, everybody from God, the guy that, you know, drives them around. But they were excited. You know,
sure.
And that, you know, a lot of people criticize Cuba Gooding for his speech. But, you know, that's your moment. You know, if you're an actor, I would think, you know, and I'm sure George C. Scott, you know, laid awake at night going, oh, I should have accepted that Oscar. If you're an actor, what you want is the highest honor that your peers can give you. And when you get that moment, you should, talk to who you want. What I really found upsetting was that the second the winners got on stage, the second they started speaking, the orchestra was playing behind them.
I heard that. Didn't Tom Hanks come out and spoof that later?
Yeah, that was a clip. Apparently, the Academy had done like a DVD for all the nominees to watch. And it was a great thing. You know, Tom Hanks is thanking Bobo, the director, and the guys at the hotel who make the bed. And the speech is going on and on, and the orchestra actually surrounds them and starts, you know, playing music, and a woman hits him over the head with a viola, and the oboe player shoots a poison dart at him. And it was just, you know, but...
Well, as far as Sunday night's thing with the music, was that them playing right through the acceptance speeches, was that supposed to encourage them to hurry up, or...
I don't know, but it just got progressively louder and louder and louder, and it was like, wow.
So I take it, yeah, that was discouraging from trying to scream over the orchestra.
Right, but I mean, to start out with the music, I mean, you've just won the Oscar, you got a million things going through your head, and you know they're going to play off soon, but as soon as you get up there, you go, I'd like, and all of a sudden it's doo 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 in the background. Like, you know, what the hell? I mean, am I 45 seconds up?
Yeah, well, I can understand their frustration with that. I mean, other actors in other years got total silence and was able to, and they were able to concentrate. So suddenly now there's such a phobia about long speeches that they're going to play them off stage the second they get on. That's not exactly fair either.
True, and Dustin Hoffman added to my dislike of him as a awards participant. You know, this is a guy that, you know, there are no winners, no losers, and then neglected Roy Scheider when he won the Oscar in '80. But then when he came out, he said, oh, losers, losers, you're all great, too. So that's another.
Is that why you dislike him as an Oscar participant?
Well, I didn't like him when he won in 80, because he was up against Scheider and all that jazz. And he said, I refuse to believe that I beat Peter Sellers or Jack Lemmon or Al Pacino. But he didn't mention Roy. So does that mean you think you beat Roy Scheider? You little bastard.
You know. I see.
So. That's a personal bias.
Well, we've wrapped up another Oscar telecast, the 78th, isn't it? The 78th Academy Awards.
78th Academy Awards.
Anything else, any other comments you want to make that we haven't covered about the Oscars?
No. Great work from Hollywood this year.
Do you think there is a movement to, now we covered this just slightly last week and maybe even mentioned it earlier, but are they getting a little formulaic about saving all their Oscar winners till very late in the year? It used to me to seem to be kind of catch as catch can, that if it happened to be late in the year, that was one thing. But it seems like in the last 5 years, especially since somewhere around Schindler's List, that's more than 10 years ago, but especially in the last 5 years, that there's been a seeming like a movement to deliberately wait until about October to release all the deep stuff.
Right. Well, I think that's twofold. Number one, that's when, you know, the Academy voting is held right after the first of the new year. So you want to get these films out around then where people are going to screens and are fresh in people's minds. Very few films open before the summer and win the Oscar. Gladiator was one. Silence of the Lambs opened on Valentine's Day. But you know, unless they've got that just strong
Passion of the Christ was in March or April.
Right. But, and also I think they don't release that many, in the summer because they're afraid they're going to get lost in the blockbuster. That's what I think hurt Cinderella Man.
So that's what that
it opened in the summer.
And it was overwhelmed.
And it was overwhelmed with everything else.
Summer is where they want to make all their money, and then fall and winter is when they want to win all their awards.
Right. Summer's when all the kids go. And, you know, you don't want to, you know, a lot of moviegoers, they don't want to fight a multiplex full of kids coming to see Spider-Man just to go see, you know, Brokeback Mountain or Cinderella Man or something. I was hoping that Universal would have re-released Cinderella Man during the holidays because all they really had was the producers and Kong. Now those were December. They could have released Cinderella Man back in November and gotten a little stronger word of mouth.
It's also a little disingenuous, I think, of Hollywood to on one hand give awards to very deep and cerebral subjects and praise them and the stuff that they hold in high esteem and deservedly so, and give them awards that make them feel good about themselves. But when independent filmmakers bring these projects to Hollywood, they don't cost a lot of money, but there's no big money to be made in it. They usually get turned out on the street. But these same kind of films are the ones that win awards.
Very true. And I think that's in a good way, I'm glad that it wasn't a blockbuster voted this year or nominated for Best Picture, because it lets especially filmmakers know that they can do good work and they don't have to, you know, compromise. You know, I'm sure Ang Lee was thinking, wow, you know, nobody saw Ride with the Devil. Ice Storm didn't do that well. Let me do The Hulk. Let me get my name back out there. And,
well, Brokeback and Crouching Tiger probably did very well for him because of the buzz, because of the word of mouth.
Right, and because they were very, very inexpensive films to make.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brokeback cost $12 million. It's made almost 80.
Only 12? I didn't even know that. Wow. All right. Well, we've covered another one, Michael. Oh, just your final score was out of 20. category of 20 categories of Oscars, you got 13 correct, 7 wrong, which makes a score, according to my calculator, of 65. I don't remember if that's better or worse or on average than your previous, and we can't compare it to Matthew, so
right.
Or myself.
It's probably about average, maybe a little worse. This is some of the surprises, but I did have Kong in the other two sound categories.
That and of course Best Picture was a kind of a throw thing here. So very good. All right. Well, we'll see you later in the PCR and Mike's rant, and thank you so much for being on Nolan Radio and talking about the Academy Awards.
Thanks, Ben.